The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
In this brand new episode of the best podcast in baseball, St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist Jeff Gordon swings by for his weekly conversation, and well, we just about solve everything. We talk about whether or not the road to contention for the Cardinals is through Gen Z, because it's going to be the 20-somethings that lead them to October, while all the 30-somethings are off signing with bigger markets. Plus, we explore whether or not the payroll disparity, as just mentioned, is something that can be curtailed. Not with a salary cap, and not exactly with a salary floor, but with some of the things that happen in CBA negotiations and areas where the CBA could be changed to create a floor without calling it a floor, and a cap that just absolutely erases draft picks. Here we go. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined again for his weekly segment here with the best podcast in baseball by STLtoday.com and Post-Dispatch columnist, longtime voice here in St. Louis when it comes to sports, Jeff Gordon. And that makes him the perfect guy to ask this question. Jeff, wintry, blustery, Arctic temperatures have gripped the St. Louis area like it has much of the country. I think we're dealing with 12 degrees, but it feels like 2 degrees here right now as we talk. So let me ask you this. What got a chillier reception this past, or what was chillier this weekend, this past week? The reception the Cardinals got at winter warmup, the temps in town, or what's happening on the ice with the Blues as you cover them this week as well?
Yeah, well, it was pretty cold this week, and the Blues tried to come out hot. You know, they're picking out rock and roll songs, did a little Twisted Sister to get started against Vegas, and, you know, less than 20 seconds in, they're down 1-0. So I think they tried to build a little warmth there, but clearly, as you saw at the winter warm-up, you know, in the past, there's been some horrible weather for the winter warm-up, and people have still showed up, and they've shown up in numbers. And, you know, this is a message that the chilly message that the management got is the same chilly message fans sent at the end of last year when they quit coming to the games that they'd already purchased tickets for. So clearly this reset is drawing a lot of scrutiny. Market forces are in play, and we are heading for an interesting time for this franchise.
Do you think that they – I do think that during the winter warm-up there was a clearer kind of sense of message, and there was a reception to, you know, fans' questions and everything, both or all three, John Mozeliak, president of baseball operations, ownership, president Bill DeWitt III, and chairman Bill DeWitt Jr., and also manager Oliver Marmol. They all fielded questions from the fans that were there. Smaller crowds than usual for all of those questions, but some really good questions. You know, like, I mean, there were multiple questions just about, like, okay, well, what is going on, or what are you going to do? There were questions like, are you going to retire 27 for Roland? There was questions about, there was a really good question about the draft and about trades at the trade deadline, asked of Mozeliak, saying, well, who's going to run that? Like if those trades are about the future and Chaim Bloom runs the future, then what role will Chaim Bloom have at the trade deadline? That's a really good question. One of the best questions was just along the lines of, you know, payroll disparity, Jeff, and how it's growing. And we saw that again in this past week as the Dodgers unroll a parade of press conferences to introduce new bullpen, new starter, you know, eventually maybe even another new hitter. They got a lot going on out there, and they're just collecting all the talent. But the question was, like, look, if payroll is a proxy or a measure of contending, and that's what it takes to win, and the Cardinals are reducing payroll, is that telling fans that they don't expect to win? I think that's fair. I mean, I think you can connect those dots, and that's a real question facing this team.
Yeah, and, you know, the DeWitts don't want to come out and say, look, yeah, well, you know, no, we can't contend because obviously we're never going to be able to spend like the Dodgers. They can say that. If fans want to connect that to meaning that we're never going to contend again, you know, certainly you can draw that conclusion. Now, the challenge for the Cardinals and everybody else, of course, is to they're winning with guys mostly. They're paying a ton of money to the guys in the 30s, the Dodgers. What you've got to do is try to win with guys in the 20s. And that's what they're trying to sell. And I think the messaging was better, where they explained that, look, we need this foundation of players. It better be good. They didn't say that, but they hope it's good. And if that turns out to be the foundation, then they can build off of that and perhaps make some additions once they sort through what they have. But the reality is, from now on, this is going to be a franchise that's going to have to be way better at what it, you know, always thought it was good at, and at times it was very good at, that is, you know, draft and develop and then augment with additions here and there. That's still the formula, but now the pressure to be really good at that is probably greater than ever, because the Dodgers don't care about the luxury tax. Steve Cohen doesn't care about the luxury tax. Luxury tax is hardly a deterrent for a couple of franchises, and that's driving the prices for the very high-end players to new levels. And yeah, I mean, it's great that the Cardinals and every other franchise can benefit from having super teams spending over the cap and spending luxury tax dollars, throwing it into the revenue share. But it creates a massive challenge for, you know, every franchise to try to work around that disparity.
Jeff, I really like the way you put that. Like, I wonder if – I mean, how feasible of a model is that for a team that is a non-Titan when it comes to payroll? Can you win with 20-somethings when the other teams are paying for 30-somethings? Like, is that possible?
Yeah, I think first of all, your 20-somethings better hit. They better, I mean, as players, not only hit, but pitch. They need to make it. They need to drive the situation. Then you can go out and get guys like the Royals did last year. I keep bringing back that message, because they, besides having a young superstar who can elevate a team, as they were also, and an older veteran who's a Hall of Fame type player behind the plate, they were able to go out and get right price guys like Michael Wacha to help fill in the blanks. Other teams have done that. So yeah, I think you can, but those guys have to be, they can't be replacement level guys. They've got to be impact players. You got to have a bunch of them that you develop. You've got to hit again and again and again on players like that. And then you got to lock them in. And then you've got to be really smart on what else you do. All of that creates a tremendous amount of pressure for management, right? So one thing I would have done differently, and this has been, many have brought this up, is while you're selling the future to fans and this is the way we've got to go, I would have had Bloom talk about it. He's going to be great at messaging if he gets a chance, when he gets a chance. But because that is, it's all on him and his new staff to try to get the team in a position where it can do that. Can it be done? Yeah, I mean, you can get in the playoffs that way. Can you catch fire once you're there? Sure.
Yeah.
What are your percentages when there's five or six other teams that have been spending? Yeah, tough.
Yeah, I find that interesting that, like, I don't know what the longevity of that model is, right? If you are a team that says, okay, we're going to contend when a player is in the 0 to 6 range, right, as far as service time. That means arrived in the majors, 3 years of pre-arb, 3 years of arbitration, and then free agency, when then the Dodgers and the Yankees and everything like that in the current model would pounce. I don't know how long you can contend. It sure seems like, and this is the word that came up a lot from ownership, was the cycles. And I asked, are you just entering your sine wave period where it is, you know, you have a peak when everything kind of comes together and you have, say, players mostly in that arbitration range, and then you have the down trough as it goes younger and your free agents leave to somebody who's going to pay them more money, and then back up and then back down. That is not really the model the Cardinals have had for the past 20 years. They've kind of defied the sine wave. Do you think they can avoid it again by doing this, or is that just, I mean, that was a question I asked ownership. Is this your new reality?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And this is an accepted reality in sports like the NHL, where there's a buildup and a window. The window shuts and you start over again, just because of the nature of the contracts. The back end of contracts for your top players end up being extravagant. The salary cap regulates what you can do. And, you know, as you win, as you contend, you draft further and further back, and you have fewer and fewer shots at guys like Weatherholt and whomever they're going to take this year in the summer. So it's very difficult to do what they did. Now, they did it for a while. Had Albert Pujols, drafted a lot of guys who could at least play, had numbers, found strength in numbers, and had a nice run with consistency with some guys that could at least fill in gaps. So really, they did make the model. They did have an unbelievable stretch, really, when you think about it, of consistent, at least contention for playoffs. Hard to do that, though, for the cycle you mentioned. You could hit on a bunch of guys, but then you have to pay them. And meanwhile, if you're starting to win, you're not getting that next wave, The only way you can beat that, you know, you're not going to beat it with Pacific Rim players here in St. Louis. The only way to beat that is you've got to absolutely nail it in the international market.
Absolutely.
You know, and they went after some high ceiling, young age guys in this latest round. You've got to nail that because that's one area where you're not as handcuffed
right.
as you are with the draft.
Well, and they won't be next year. That's something that is really important for the 2026 and 2025. So 2025 draft and 2026 international. The Cardinals should have, as of right now, they should have some of the largest bonus pool money to offer. The Cardinals will have the fifth pick overall in the MLB draft. They also will have another gap pick. And that is going to increase their purse to be one of the biggest, which allows for some strategy. Just for some background, bonus pools are tied to the slot money that the commissioner's office sets for every level of pick. And while teams don't have to give that slot money, it is all added up. All the slot money for each of their picks is added up to give them a spending limit. And with more picks and a higher pick in five, the Cardinals are going to have a higher purse. That also is reflected then in their international pool. This international pool, you know, they went after athletes up the middle with hit tools. Pedro Strop's son, which I think is interesting. Very, you know, interesting player. They got another catcher from Panama. You know, you just look at it and you're like, all right, well, this is a guy. They're very young, so you don't really know. And it's a big, you know, gamble, but they have the profiles of if they hit, you know, as they'll advance. And as they advance, they already have the skills to stay at those positions, center field, shortstop, that kind of thing. They did get a third baseman, Francisco Cordero's son, which was interesting. You know, and there's a chance that there at number five, there'll be a prep third baseman that, you know, that I hesitate to give comps, but he's very similar to Austin Riley, which would be a heck of a get for the Cardinals. So they're in good position to acquire in this, say, 20-month period, let's say, or maybe even we can tighten it down a little bit, this 14-month period, they're in position to acquire a lot of folks for that 2031 club, but I don't know what that does for the 2025 club.
Yeah, the key is, and, you know, and they've started the process of doing this, and you follow this, you know, more closely than I do, but they certainly have shifted to go after more high-ceiling guys in general and trying to And they've hit on some and they've missed on some, you know. I don't think Baez is going to make it, but, you know, it was worth a shot. The power guy, big arm, all that stuff.
Still pretty young, but yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to age out immediately, but yeah. It's just they aimed high and they aimed high in this class. And I want to ask you this question. I mean, the international market for Latin America is less of a Wild West than it used to be. A lot more regulation.
No, it's still bad. Yeah.
Well, it's still bad. So, but it used to be even worse with the agents and such, and all the age issues. But yeah. You know, you're even with lesser, even if you don't have a ton of money in your pool, it seems like there's so many variables when you're taking guys out of Venezuela, mm-hmm. which they've done, and other places in Panama, which aren't as quite as exposed,
or Nicaragua, where they got the best player from there.
Yeah. But there's variable there, right? So it's possible that you can score and hit on guys that didn't necessarily cost you a ton of money, but it's,
yeah.
But man, it is, you're talking, we're talking about raw 17-year-olds, you know, but that's one thing they just have to be better at. I mean, they don't have an option here. That's one path. That's one of the ways you can do this. Bad news, the Dodgers have always been really good at this as well, right? And they're really good at the draft as well. And they're very good at looking at other people's farm systems as well. So, you know, it is a chore. You are no longer smarter than everybody, which was the case for a long time. A lot of teams didn't run smart operations. Now most teams do. Mm-hmm. Most teams have process now. Most teams have a business-like approach to evaluations, quantifying, making value decisions. And you, but you know, it comes down to, can your scouts find people that other people miss? Can you find some gems to even it up? And boy, what a challenge for Hyman and his people.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If your job at a healthcare facility includes disinfecting against viruses, you know prevention is the best medicine. And maintaining healthy spaces starts with a healthy cleaning routine. Grainger's world-class supply chain helps ensure you have the quality products you need when you need them. From disinfectants and cleaning supplies to personal protective equipment, so you can help deliver a clean bill of health. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I asked Tyler Koeppner in the previous episode of the Best Podcast in Baseball, Tyler Koeppner, the longtime baseball writer and senior baseball writer there at The Athletic. I asked him, is it harder to get 400 baseball writers to agree on who a Hall of Famer is than it is to get 30 owners to describe or to agree on how to limit spending, or at least narrow spending from, you know, number one to number 30. Do you see a way out of this disparity? Actually, you know what? Let's just get to it. Jeff, do you want a way out of this disparity, or do you kind of dig what the Dodgers are doing?
Well, it is good. And again, it's not terrible for the industry to have a super team, for sure, especially in a big market. And they're going to pour a lot of money into the industry. Let's be honest here, right?
Yeah.
However, having said that, you know, I do a lot of union work. So I look at, I know I do a lot of collective bargaining, and it never ceases to amaze me how baseball has managed to continue to let Scott Boras and the other top agents fuel an industry, or fuel a system, they can maintain a system that truly rewards the megastars with unlimited money, but does a poor job of taking care of the guys in the middle. And the NBA had this trouble. The NBA had a pushing and shoving. It came down to trying to calm down the super agents back in the day so that the middle class would get taken care of. And so what I see in baseball is that, you know, what you need is some sort of a floor to make the Nuttings of the world, the Pirates, spend money.
Yeah.
You need to have a higher salary floor so that guarantees that middle veteran player is going to get paid. And you have to just, again, continue to make it tougher on teams that spend way over a certain limit. Make more teams spend money and, you know, make it harder for the teams that spend a lot of money to just be unlimited. There's some things you can do, but the players consistently vote against that because they want to maintain the ability of a Juan Soto to get a crazy contract. You know, in baseball, with the disparity of revenues that's been exaggerated by the demise of some of these regional sports networks and how long that's going to take to rebuild, it could be a 5-year rebuild to get that revenue back for these franchises. It's never been more important to have better controls. But this is a sacrifice the owners have made. And I look around at all these guys who are pretty good ball players who don't have contracts. Who I don't know how much they're going to make, who can play baseball. You know, the Harrison Baters of the world, I mean, he's a decent player. He could be a fourth, fifth outfielder. Jack, a lot of guys waiting to get something, right?
Yeah, Jack Flaherty, pretty good pitcher. Could really help a contending team, you know. And 10 years ago, I mean, you look at, like, what middle relievers were making because they were veterans, not in a rotation, or 20 years ago, I guess I should say. And now, like, that middle class – that middle group of players has just been squeezed out. So there does seem to need to be like a communication with the union a little bit about that, is they have taken, there's no longer this bell curve, right, of payment. It's more like two humps. You know, you have the ones who are willing to sign high dollar and short term deals. And then on the other extreme, you have the super high dollar and the long-term deals. And then this trough in the middle, there's a whole lot of free agents. Jeff, take us in. I mean, you do a lot of CBA, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, like, But take us into like how that works. Give us a glimpse from your perspective of like what is the horse trading that goes on and how that might relate to what's on the horizon for baseball.
Well, the biggest thing you've got to set is, okay, what is your number one priority, right? And there's always one thing that that you're not going to move on. What's the one thing that you'll go to your, you know, go to a standoff and even a shutdown for? For me, what I could never get over, besides the fact that they haven't enforced a salary floor, a payroll floor, to force teams to spend and have all this gobbledygook and, you know, to try to punish teams for being non-competitive, instead of just doing it, instead of making something clear. The thing I always marveled at is why, for all the leverage that the Major League Baseball Players Association had, why does it take so long for a player to make money? It is NHL, man. You got 3 years, sometimes less, and you're making coin. If you can play, you're making coin, period. And there's a system in place to make sure you do. And it, why does it take forever? Why does Ryan Helsley, he's just now making money. What is he, 30 years old, Derek?
Yeah.
You know, he's no kid. If he was in hockey, he would have been making money a while ago with that arm he has. So I don't understand why the players haven't made that a look. We are going to get paid a lot sooner, and we're going to change the way this game is run so that guys do get deals. Now, some guys are getting paid with these deals that buy into free agency and reward them for what would have been their latter arbitration years. But to me, in bargaining, you set your priority and you're the one you're not moving off of. And for the players, it's been what they're not moving off of is we want Juan Soto to get all the money in the world. We want those types of contracts. We want the Dodgers to be able to do that. We want Steve Cohen to be able to do that. We want the Phillies to do that. And we don't care about the teams that don't spend. We don't care about the middle class. And we don't care if players take till they're 30 years old to finally get paid, Derek. They're stupid.
Well, they doubled the minimum pretty much in this last CBA. So that was a huge gain for the younger players. Arbitration there for a while was the biggest escalator of salaries, but salaries were starting smaller, so it really didn't show that way. But if you wanted a player to double, triple, quintuple their salary, the only place to do that consistently for a wide swath of the players was arbitration, not free agency. In a way, baseball still stuck, not in a way at all. Entirely part of this is baseball stuck in this historic schematic of, service time of 6 years to get free agency. And this just traces back, 50 years, and it just can't to the falling of the reserve clause. And for some odd reason, that's the structure that the owners resist. And of course, because they have cross-control players through their peak, and then you have teams forever dialing up how early players get. And so, all the market factors are very fascinating as they kind of like play off of each other, and you can watch it to see through the tenets that each of these cling to. You're right. The union wants the huge free open market, the massive headline. That, quick aside, is part of why deferred money is so hip now. Like, look at some of these deals that were done. One of the recent deals was, it was advertised as about $95 million, right?
It was like 65 is deferred. That's Santander, right?
Yeah. Oh, Santander. That's right. It was Santander. Thank you. It was $95 million, but the modern day value is $68 million. Okay. So that contract today is actually a $68 million contract. But to your point, the agents don't want that advertised that way because it's not pushing the market. And teams are like, cool, you advertise it however you want, because we're going to do this on what it's costing us in real term. And I know that deferred money gets a lot of attention and everything like that. And I think sometimes baseball writers don't do a good job, or baseball media or media in general don't do a good job of saying what that means. That's not that the money isn't paid. It's not like this great savings for teams. They still have to pay that money out when it's due, because it has to be there in saving, in the escrow, in investment, whatever. It has to be there. The union and the player has to know that it's there. It's not that they're like kicking the can down the road and they'll write a check 10 years from now that they haven't. There are rules in place in the CBA for when that money has to be paid, and it's coming out. The big change is that it's paid in today's money. And so you're saving that cost. It's not as huge as the $70 million deferred every year or whatever that you're talking about with Ohtani, but it is when you get the difference between what's being advertised to fans, what's being advertised to the market, what's making the headlines, how much this guy is making, and what a team is really paying for him. And sorry for the rant there, but I want to try to convey to people that, like, there's a number beneath these big numbers. When you see the word deferred, your first instinct should be, what's it really worth? That's the question.
Yeah, and I think it's a win all the way around. I don't have any problem with it. In fact, if I'm on a player side and being on the labor side, I have been on the employee side. You know, I look at the money that these guys are making, how much shows up in their account every 2 weeks, and right. thinking there are tax benefits for deferred money.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes.
And for the player, how much do you need in a given year? I laugh at it. I'm trying to remember the picture that built to his castle down in Branson. It was a castle on a hill quickly realized that he didn't really need, and ended up donating it to charity. And it subsequently got flipped into becoming a resort. It's just one reminder of what happens when you give a guy all the money in the world. What is he going to do with it? If I'm an agent and I got players, I'm thinking, yeah, take the deferred money. There's a tax benefit. You've got financial planning that's well into your post-playing days. You're going to be fine. How much can you spend during the season anyways, right? I mean, so I think it's great. I think it's a win-win all around. Like you say, the team gets to spend money in today's terms. The agent's happy. The team's happy. The player should be happy. So, you know, it's a bit of a circumvention, of course. There's always going to be a circumvention. But that's one thing I don't have an issue with. I think it's actually
– no, it's fine.
It's fascinating, though, how long – it does not take agents long or owners long to figure out the workarounds, does it, Derek?
It does not. It takes exactly 5 minutes. It took less time. I kid you not. I'm not even making a joke here. Okay, right? I'm going to phrase this right. It took less time for teams and agents – to figure workarounds in the current CBA, the one that was just negotiated a few years ago. It took them less time to figure out the workarounds than it did for Major League Baseball to deliver the CBA to the teams. Like, all the agreements are done, right, and everything like that, but then they still have the process of putting it all together, okaying the fine print, everything like that. It was like there were teams that were like, we need these rules, and we don't yet have the language around which to follow these rules, but teams and agents already knew their way around those rules.
That's right.
It was so interesting to, like, just talk to folks in that process, because I like to get the CBA too and read through it and, like, find the different, like, intricacies and the little things where it guarantees suites on the road or moving costs, just fun little trivial stuff like that I find interesting. So I asked Bill DeWitt III and Bill DeWitt Jr., I said, is your end game, like this reset, how much is your end game and getting back to that consistency of contention and all the things that make the Cardinals and the rise back to October and then staying there? How much of that is contingent on getting a salary cap? They pushed back. They said that they didn't need to discuss what the next economic structure was going to be, but Bill DeWitt III said a salary cap is not necessary for what we have planned, but whatever the next economic structure is, if it's a slight change or a significant change that could cost games because of a lockout, let's be blunt, here in 2 years when the next CBA is up, he said any change is still going to rely on player development. It's still going to be based on who can you draft, who can you sign as an amateur, and how good are you at getting them to be better players. Whatever economic structure is in place, that will still be valuable. And so I wonder, Jeff, as we kind of look through this, if maybe the answer provides a window into the solution, and that it's not a salary cap, and that it's not even a salary floor in terms of spending for teams, because one way to force teams up on a floor is never to define a floor, but instead to do exactly what you're talking about, to raise the minimum salary of the younger players. If that goes up, then salary floors automatically go up. If the person on a major league roster makes no less than $1 million and then also has incentivized structures in there, then you're going to see, because that's what they want, right? That's what they have with the rookie pool. They base it on war. They base it on performance. It's why some of these guys more than doubled their salary. You know, Andre Pallante got a nice bump. Mason Wynn got an excellent bump. Brendan Donovan got an excellent bump. Far more than the young players of yesteryear would have got, as they would have just been stuck at their minimum salary. So baseball is already moving in this direction where there's a communal pool to pay off rookies. Well, maybe if you take away, if you keep that communal pool, but you take that idea and take it to the individual teams, raise the minimum salary, then you have created a floor without ever saying it, because you've got 26 guys on the roster. They're all making a million, and then they're all making on top of that what their performance suggests. That's one way to do it.
Well, I see. Now, this is the kind of stuff that should happen while you're preparing to bargain, right? This is
right.
This would be this is a way without fundamentally altering the relationship between the players and owners, which is very difficult to do without a strike. Very hard to do. You're trying to find a way to this solution. You know, I would just, you know, to your point, Derek, I'll ask you this. If Mason Wynn, let's just say he's a year away from free agency. Let's say he's at his final arbitration year. What is his value as a player, as he is the player that he is today? What should he be making? 10 million, 12 million?
Oh, that's a great question. So what? Where is he again in his arbitration?
Let's just say he's instead of where he's at now. Let's say he's hitting his final arbitration year this winter.
So
he's going through his last round.
So he's 5 years of service time. He's an everyday shortstop. He's
right.
Gold glove caliber. He's hitting 15 to 20 home runs, and he's a leadoff hitter. I mean, you are talking about 5 years out from now, 4 years out from now. You're talking about 15 to $17 million dollar player.
So, and that's my issue.
Maybe even more, depending on how, you know, you look at, I mean, look, if you this is fun because people will listen to it, but go ahead, talk through it, and I will look up exactly what he is worth.
I'll ask you this while you're looking it up. What is the phrase that Scott Boras uses when a player is delivering value beyond what he's actually being paid? He's got
he's got a great line for that. Yeah, I can't.
Referral
benefits, something.
He's got, yeah, it's something that, you know, I only took Econ 1 and 2 and didn't have to take the tougher Econ course at Mizzou. Back then I was able to skate on that. So, but there is a word, there is a phrase for that. And Wynn, as a player today, at his very young age, is delivering incredible value and unpaid income, unpaid salary.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, baseball can correct that. The Cardinals, with their model, to go back to where the Cardinals are, they hope that doesn't happen, because for this model to work for the Cardinals, they have to load up a bunch of guys, young and inexpensive, to be able to deliver a $250 million product on $180 million payroll.
Yeah.
Or maybe a $300 million product on $180 million. That would be the goal, right, Derek?
Yeah. Yep. So, interestingly enough, so Bobby Witt Jr. signed that huge extension, right? And since baseball is a comparative business and a precedent business, especially when it comes to players who are on arbitration, I'm not saying that Wynn is Bobby Witt Jr. at the moment, right? Bobby Witt Jr. is one of the best all-around players in the game and the best shortstop in the game for sure. But he does set the standard by which the young shortstops will be measured, and he moved the bar. And so right around the time that you're talking about for Mason and Bobby Witt's entering this period now, he'd be making between $13 million and $19 million. And then that first year of free agency, Bobby Witt is a $30 million player with $35 million on the horizon. So that gives you a sense of the structure, right? In that 5 year to sixth year of an elite shortstop, and that's today, and Mason's going to hit it as it's already been pushed forward a little bit more. Bobby Witt has set the standard at $13 million and $19 million. So my estimate, not too shabby right off the top
good.
Of my head.
You know, Derek, the question that comes up a lot for you and for Daniel, myself, for Lynn, everybody asking these questions, will the Cardinals start following that Braves model and actually pay the guy? I don't think the only guy they have that falls into the category remotely is Wynn that you would want to lock in and start going early. Teams like the Tigers have gone really early on guys that may or may not make it.
And Jackson Chourio before he played a game.
You know, but though the expectation is that these guys are going to be core players. Do the Cardinals break their model and start doing more of that and more sooner and more often. Of course, the players have to develop. And that means Jordan Walker's, the smile he has to result in production. Gorman's motivation's got to result in the results. Donovan's grit's got to, stay there. But do they start doing that?
Yeah. Well, if they do, it'll be Heim Bloom that leads that. That seems to be the answer from the Cardinals is, those are the deals that will extend into his leadership of the team. And if they're going to look into that, then it will be driven by him, and it likely will be driven after this season by what they learn about these players. That certainly seems the trend. I know that it's a question that I'm asking a lot about, to be honest, Jeff. I had a conversation recently about it that I hope becomes fruitful for an article. Just trying to understand, like, all right, if you are going to put such an emphasis on youth, especially on the position player side, because as we discussed in the video for this podcast, the pitching side still is veteran. I mean, it's got an average age of 32, and it's got three members of the five-man rotation older than that. So Andre Pallante is really doing the heavy lifting of keeping that age down when you look at the five starters. But, when you look at what they're trying to do, how much of that is locking in the cornerstones as Atlanta did. And I think one thing that the Cardinals have to figure out how to do is identify that talent like Atlanta did. I mean, in a few cases, the young players, credit to them, they went up and grabbed Atlanta's front office by the lapels and said, "We're freaking awesome. We are awesome. You want to keep us here? Let's do this thing." Just look up and down the road. And then in another few cases, Atlanta was like, "Hey, thanks, Oakland, for being our farm system. We want to get those guys, and we're happy to sign them long-term because we saw how they played for you. Thumbs up. Thanks, man." Atlanta, it was very smart moves, savvy moves, really one of the sharpest front office going. But they weren't able to do it with their pitchers, right? Like, except they were able to do it with one pitcher, but Max Fried's not there anymore, and they're kind of looking around for pitching. So it's not a perfect model, but it is a model that the Cardinals need to get better at identifying who to give those deals to. They have to get willing to get those deals to. It is entirely possible, Jeff. This is unfathomable. How do you think that would you just consider for a moment that the extension that Mason Wynn would look to sign would be the biggest deal in Cardinal history? That speaks to how little they've gone in the marketplace and how they have restrained spending on outside or high dollar players, because their biggest deal for a free agent is Sonny Gray. If you don't count Matt Holliday, right? I mean, it technically is Matt Holliday, but he re-signed with them. And their biggest deal overall is Paul Goldschmidt. And that was an extension. And that was how many years ago? So that's where we're at. And so any sort of extension for Mason Wynn is going to give him the chance at least to earn far more than what Goldschmidt's extension was. And that's the biggest deal. That to me is so fascinating. And then the other part of it that they have to get to is they have to get the performance. So they have to have the Ronald Acuna Jr., the Ozzy Albies, the Austin Riley. They have to have that player on their team grab the box score by its nose and just squeeze every bit of production out of it and say, "You cannot live without me. You cannot go on without me. You need to keep me here. Your next contender, your next chance at October is my team, and you want me around." They do need that kind of production.
All right, I got one big question for Derek before we wrap up here.
Okay.
This is a great segue to it. And I talk about this a lot in my chats. The world has changed. Franchise valuations have gone through the roof.
Yep.
The country has a lot of billionaires, big time billionaires, multi billionaires, maybe some trillionaires coming up soon. Increasingly, some of these guys have decided they need to have a franchise of some description. And baseball is seeing more owners along the Steve Cohen line and fewer owners who's built up a franchise over the years, like a Reinsdorf. The resources of some
Wait,
of
what?
These
owners, no, you know, no, like a Reinsdorf. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, he bought the team 100 years ago, right?
I understand.
He didn't build it up, but he just outlasted. He lasted forever.
Yeah,
let's put it that way as a partner. So now this franchise has gained all this value.
I don't think build would be the verb I'd use there. But
endured.
Yeah.
And enjoyed appreciation for no good reason other than he owns one of these teams because it's
outlasted. Yeah.
So anyways, these guys are coming in the sport now. New owners, the guys the guy that bought the Commanders has got multiple teams, his group of people, of billionaires that got together to do the Dodgers thing, the guys that have got crazy dollars. This is where sports is going because of franchise valuations. And frankly, there are just a lot of really rich people who can do this and they don't care. The Cardinals are running this like a business. They've got people in the ownership group that have money. There are other people who've come along, like we saw in San Diego or Philadelphia, that got, I could do whatever. I'm tired of this. We're just going to go get what done, whatever. I'm going to go talk to Scott Boras myself. Those guys. So are the Cardinals eventually, I mean, the Stewits aren't going anywhere anytime soon, but ultimately this franchise, is it going to end up in the hands of a billionaire? And is that ultimately what it will take for it to be viable in an industry that increasingly is run by billionaires?
I think that's a great question because what will decide that is the tipping point, right? When there are more of those owners in the room or they're more powerful than the other ones, right? So if we have, this is a very interesting time in baseball, and this is something that in my conversation with Bill DeWitt III, he brought up in the sense that like you're seeing this wide gap be dramatic now. Because the teams that are taking the hit on the cable tend to be mid to small market. He said, so the timing is just there because if you look at the list of teams that are having this like cable turbulence and having to rework their broadcast deals at a lower rate and are getting hit by the cord cutters, the first wave is just going through the small market teams. Look around it, right? Like look who it's happening to in the NL Central. It's Milwaukee, St. Louis, and Cincinnati. The Cubs are fortified against it. And his point was that eventually that's going to get to the big market teams. Eventually that's going to hit even the teams that run their own network. Eventually this is going to be the reckoning is going to happen for them. And it could be in a year. It could be in 2 years. And if all these deals are being done on short-term basis, which is what the commissioner's office is urging, then it could come at a time when they renegotiate and do a national deal, which is what the commissioner's office wants to. And then all of a sudden you raise all boats, right? And that's going to be possible as long as you're talking about 2/3 of the owners in the room saying we benefit from this. And then you have the 5-6 billionaires in the office or in the room that go, gosh, this is going to cost us a competitive edge. Or this is going to cost us some kind of money, or our revenue is going to go down and we're going to have to lose it for the benefit of all. As long as that dynamic is in place where you have the owners who run it like a business, to use your description, outnumbering the owners that run it like a hobby, to use my description, or better yet, run it like a hedge fund. That's the more better example. As long as you have that, you still have a chance. And I think as we talk through this, like one way for DeWitt offered the answer a little bit, or he offered the two answers during the press conference, both DeWitts did, but Chairman Bill DeWitt did. If you want to address the payroll disparity and get things going where there's a narrow bandwidth of contention, if not spending, right? So that the big star players, the Sotos, can still make huge money. Otani can still make huge money. The answer lies in a better national package for the TV so that everybody revenues floats up and stricter penalties for draft picks. Because I know this caught your ear, Jeff. One of the things he brought up over and over again and our colleague Lynn Worthy wrote about was the fact that the Cardinals got in this space because they lost draft picks. Well, you want to start making it difficult for teams who spend a whole bunch and collect free agents and everything like that. Start taking away draft picks at a bigger clip. Start elevating all into a national package. So you have rising revenue. You make it difficult for the higher spending teams to, you know, bring in the talent underneath and they don't want to get into the perpetual chase that the Cardinals just went through. That can be costly, even for the costliest team. And then from, and this is the last thing I'll ask you, Jeff, and then from a CBA perspective, that makes some sense, right? Because the union would be negotiating on the benefit of its members, and the cost would be in draft picks, which are not yet members. So it's a little bit easier for them to stomach a higher penalty, and the owners could even just wrap their heads around it on their own. And back to my question, get 30 of them to agree and say, look, let's really steam it. Let's have a number where you are absent from a draft, like make it hard, or you are absent from an international signing period, or you are one pick in, or you might have seven picks, but your bonus pool is cut in half, because then you're just going to start to see some real change.
No, I think these are really good ideas, and it's good thinking, and it's a way to get to a CBA that benefits more players who are paying, you know, their B2B in the
bingo
group, you're supposed to,
because then that money isn't going to draft picks; it's going to the actual players. It's not like, oh, well, we're just going to go draft this guy and give him a bonus. No, we don't have that money. We're going to go sign Jack Flaherty.
Yeah, in a different way, it's sort of like every league has to go through a reckoning. And what we saw in the NFL was it got ridiculous with some of the rookie contracts, some of the things that were happening in the with guys coming in with the middle tier of players getting jobbed and all this. You know, they had to kind of put some controls on what was happening with the incoming players to try to get more benefit for guys who've been around. So every CBA needs to be tweaked, and you've got some really good ideas of how to do it without any harm to the members, but only a benefit to the members. The hard part, though, that alliance between the super agents and the super owners who love each other, and to the detriment of most of the owners and most of the players. So that's how do you work around that dynamic?
Yeah, great point.
Very powerful agents, very powerful owners, rest of owners, rest of players. You know what? It's a democracy that at some point the players have to make a stand. You know, in the NBA, it got messy. Democracy got messy in the NBA, and they finally figured out it's a system that's got its own quirks and flaws, but you've seen I think some progress in terms of how many teams have superstar players.
Yeah, that's fair. You still see collections of talent, but they don't last long, which is interesting too. So you created a league where very few players, if any, stay with the same team.
No.
And how palatable is that? So
there's a whole lot of issues there too.
Yeah. They just don't stay with the same team as they bounce around, which is great in a way, but also, is baseball ready for that being something that is completely absent from its game too? It almost is, but then there's still Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright, and they're still there. That is St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports columnist, video podcast host, hockey podcast host, baseball commentator, Mizzou Hoops pundit, CBA negotiator, Blues beat writer occasionally. How many titles do you have, Jeff?
I'll do a few things. You know, we're getting there. Hopefully my boy Matt DeFranks is enjoying himself in Maui.
We'll
get him back here, and we'll be back on the NetFront presence soon. So look forward to that.
What a treat it's been, I'm sure, for Blues fans to have two guys who haven't covered the team in 20-plus years writing, you know, trying to figure out how to keep up with the men on skates. So we're doing our best. Jeff Gordon, thank you very much for joining me. You can find all of his work at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. I forgot to mention that he's also the tip sheet author. Goodness, he does everything. In fact, he's got to get off this call here, off this podcast, so he can race and go cover Blues practice. You can find that coverage, of course, on stldayday.com, along with all of our podcasts. He mentioned NetFront Presence, the hockey podcast. There's also Eye on the Tigers, the Mizzou podcast. And we also have a soccer podcast as well for STL City with my pal Tom Timmerman. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly, sometimes twice weekly, like it was here. But it's brought to you weekly thanks to Jeff Gordon and Closet by Design in St. Louis. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Jeff, this has been a pleasure, man. We solved everything. We solved it all.
Absolutely. Just let us put us in charge, Derek. We're good.
Cannot wait to get in the room where it happens and, you know, just ahead of a lockout. It will be great. Thank you.
Take care.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.